Christy and I were watching our grandkids last weekend, and on Saturday morning I drove to Dillon's and I bought some muffins, some fruit, and some juice, and was home in just a couple of minutes. And it was quick, it was easy, and it was deceptive. What had just happened? You say, well, you went to Dillon's, Terry, there's nothing really cosmic about that. But it was deceptive because it was just so normal. It was deceptive in that I could miss what happened. Because what happened was things that kings of old could not dream of had happened, where I had access to food of every kind imaginable very quickly, any time of the year. And it doesn't happen often. I don't ponder those things in Dillon's parking lot very often. But on this particular Saturday morning, I was struck as I was walking to my truck with my Daily Bread Plus in hand. I was contemplating the miracle of this abundance. I was amazed at human logistics. I mean, how do they do that? I was amazed at God's provision. How does He do that? One of the phrases that's included in many prayers before meals among certain faith traditions, Christian faith traditions, is, for what we're about to receive, make us truly grateful. And you can say, well, why pray asking God to make us grateful? Why don't you just say, I'm grateful for the food? And I think the reason why that's included in many prayers is because we recognize that we need God's help to remember to be grateful to God. This year, we are in a series we called Closing the Gap on Faith and Love, closing the gap from where we are, where we could be, and our confidence in God and our love for one another. And this summer, we're in a sub-series, growing in a conversational relationship with God. And today, we're going to be in the Lord's Prayer again. So let's read this together. Join me, please. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. In the New Testament, the word that's translated bread is really often used to indicate food in general. So this is not just about bread, it's about what we need to live. And a prayer for daily bread is a prayer for what we need today. It's a very practical request, but it's also a request that is designed to help provide ongoing perspective. It's a prayer to remember to remember. And if you remember, we talked about this when we started looking at the Lord's Prayer. The Lord's Prayer is about how, not just what to pray. You certainly can repeat these words verbatim. I have and do often. But you can repeat the content and miss the intent. And the intent here is that in this part where he says, pray for daily bread, is a reminder of our need and of his provision. This is especially important for those of us who live in countries where the daily eating of food is common rather than rare. We can easily forget his provision and our need for him. And so then we can stop being mindful of how dependent we are on God, and then we can forget to be grateful. So for us, food sort of magically appears on Dillon's shelves. How do we feel needy or grateful when that's true? Besides, we're paying for the stuff, and the money that we use to buy that food doesn't magically appear in our bank accounts. We work for it. In Wichita, even the very poor can have access to daily food. They can show up at the Lord's Diner. They have 2 brick-and-mortar locations. They have 3 mobile food trucks, and you can eat really good meals for free every day. And it's called the Lord's Diner, but unless you have eyes to see what's really happening, you'll miss the Lord in the diner, and you'll just see nice and generous people. The food chain in modern society is really complex. It begins with those who grow and harvest the food at the ground level, those who transport it, process it, package it, sell it at local grocery stores and restaurants. New York City alone, 52 million pounds of food are distributed every day. Worldwide, humans eat over 17 billion pounds of food every day. And you can think about this and see this and wonder, how is he in this? How is he providing daily food? Why should I pray for God to provide food? We go to work, we get the money, we go to Dillon's, we go to the grocery store to get the food. Sure, he makes things grow, but it can seem like, as we become numb to what's really going on, that the sun shines, the rain falls, crops grow. It all looks like a very natural process. How do we remember to see him in all of this? We all know we should be grateful. We all know we should remember that we're dependent. But what does it mean for us to actually grow in our sense of dependence and gratitude? So let's look at another case study this morning, this one from Israel's history, where daily bread was very obviously provided by God. There was no chance of missing this fact. Yet even though it was very obvious God was providing, they had trouble remaining grateful. And here's the backstory in case you're not familiar with it. Israel as a nation had been rescued from hundreds of years of slavery in Egypt. The entire event is called the Exodus, and the people frequently during this long journey forgot all that God had done to rescue them, especially when things became difficult. And they particularly had difficulty trusting God would provide for their daily needs, even though he had been faithful over and over. And as you read the Exodus, then you see that God was teaching them to trust. He was trying to turn them from the deadening effect on the human heart of demanding to a heart of trusting. And so he used a number of training tools to do this. They followed a pillar of fire at night, a pillar of cloud at day. When it went, they went. When it stopped, they stopped. When it went, they went. When it stopped, they stopped. And they were very literally following his lead, but they often didn't appreciate the fact of his leadership or his style of leadership or what he was trying to train into them. And part of the nature of the journey was that God put them in a situation where they had to rely on him to provide food, and he did so in direct fashion. He provided daily bread. And when you read about God providing bread in the wilderness, God bypassed the process, the normal process of seeds germinating, photosynthesis, the plant maturing process, or maybe he didn't bypass, maybe he just sped it up. But however he did it, when they woke up, the food was there. It was on the ground, ready to go. And they called it manna, which means, what is it? Because that's what they said when they saw it. They said in Hebrew, manna, what is it? And Moses told them what it was. And he told them that there were some instructions that went with the manna. It was a seed-like food that had a certain sweetness to it. It could be baked, made into a variety of meals. And the instructions that came with the manna were really simple. There's two of them. Gather every day what you need for your family. What you don't eat that day, discard. Every Friday, gather enough for 2 days so you don't have to go out on the Sabbath and gather any. That's it. That's all the instructions that came with this manna. And they had trouble with those instructions. They would go out frequently and try to save some. They would gather enough for 2 days, and in the morning they'd wake up and the manna would be spoiled. They would go out and wander around on the Sabbath looking for manna. They couldn't find it. And it wasn't because the instructions were so difficult. It's because they found it difficult to trust God with daily bread. And this was indicative of their larger problem with trusting God with their lives as a whole. He wanted them to learn to trust that he would provide daily bread every day and to resist the urge to save some just in case one day God was not faithful. God was not teaching them to become passive. They still had to travel, to collect, to cook, to work. Eventually, he was going to call them to go into combat. But in the end, if God did not provide, they were not going to eat or live. And so through the daily bread provision, he was teaching them active trust. Later, they got sick of eating manna, and they wished they could go back to Egypt. Everything was better there. The food was better there. They were slaves there. How is that better? The king killed their children there. How is that better? They lived in forced labor camps. And so they complained because God was not providing. Then they complained about what he did provide. And their collective memory in terms of dependence and gratitude was very short, as is ours. And so there's two really important messages, principles that need to shape who we're becoming. We have to continually nurture a good memory. We have to remember our dependency on God because we forget. And then we have to continually nurture a heart of gratitude for God's provision. So just as grace is not opposed to effort but to earning, so praying for daily bread does not substitute for work. Dependency on God is not at odds with proactive, energetic, hard work. They go together in the lives of believers. And there are those who are physically unable to work in order to provide for their own needs and to provide for the needs of others. But for most people, faithfulness to God means that we take responsibility for ourselves. So Paul told the Thessalonians, he said, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, mind your own business, work with your hands, so that your daily life will win the respect of outsiders and you won't be dependent on anyone else. And the phrase work with your hand doesn't apply just to physical labor. It means anybody, whatever you do for a living. And the phrase for a living is interesting because what most people do vocationally takes up a good bit of their lives. And these jobs make up most of the waking hours for most adults. It's also true that these jobs pay for our living, including housing, food, transportation, entertainment, giving away money, all the things that make up our lives. And so we do work for a living, and it takes up a lot of our lives, and it pays for what makes up our lives. This is not a tragedy. People sometimes think the fact that we spend most of our lives working for what makes up our lives is a tragedy. It's really not. It's only tragic when people squander their lives. Work is a gift. We're designed to be productive and creative, and it's a gift to enjoy your work, but it's also, believe it or not, a gift to have good work to do whether you enjoy it or not. So it's not tragic to spend your life being faithful with your stewardship. It's tragic to waste your life on unfaithfulness, whatever form unfaithfulness takes, whether it's working too little or working too much. Leonard Schoen started U-Haul right after World War II when all the soldiers, airmen, sailors were coming back from the war, and our country became mobile like it never had before. People were leaving family business and moving around. They'd experienced travel. And so Schoen figured he could make a lot of money renting trailers to these soldiers, and he was right. He became a multi-billionaire. Set up a little shop, building trailers, renting them out. And he worked 16-hour days every day for decades. And what he got was rich and miserable and ultimately alone. He was married 5 times. His 12 children fought each other and they fought him. Some hated him enough to have him kicked out of the company he built. He took 2 of his own sons to court, won a settlement against him. He lived his final years in seclusion, miserable, and then he killed himself. That was the end. And so he worked for a living, worked hard for a living, but it seems like he failed to understand the purpose of his living. And this is not about, yeah, that's what happens to rich people. There are plenty of miserable, ungodly poor people. This is about working for a living and knowing what you are supposed to be doing with your life. That's the balancing factor. Our lives are to be spent for God's glory, and one way that we bring him glory is by our labor, our work. But many people labor in vain because they don't do what they do for the glory of God. Paul said, whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And so prayer for daily bread doesn't substitute for daily work. It complements it. It balances it. It informs it. It keeps daily work tethered to dependence and gratitude. It keeps what we do for a living anchored to the purpose of living. And Paul even said that if a man doesn't work, if assumed that man could work, then that man shouldn't eat. And that sounds harsh, but it's because Paul said if you give him what he could work for, then you're not helping his soul or his life. And the person who could work for a living and refuses to, they shouldn't be praying for daily bread unless they're willing to work for it. But Paul, at the same time, took up a collection, was a part of taking up collections for a group of believers in a region that were suffering from a famine. The church was revolutionary then and now in taking care of people with real needs. Again, the balance is that it's paying attention to what you do for a living. Remember why it is that you live. You live for the glory of God and for the good of others. And so praying for your daily bread could also include praying for your work, for your health, for your boss, for your coworkers, all the things that are part of what we call earning your daily bread. And there's a sense in which we do earn it, and there's a sense in which nothing we have is earned. Paul said, what do you have that you didn't receive? It's a rhetorical question, nothing. And so praying, give us our daily bread, is larger than those simple words. And you can use those specific words if you like, but don't miss the point. The point is an ongoing recognition of our dependence on God. We have to remember to remember. We have to be shaped in our hearts and our minds by this truth. We depend on God, and we're fooled into thinking otherwise. When Jesus spoke this prayer, it was during a time when everybody, almost everybody, was a day laborer. Most first century workers were paid one day at a time, and there was no Lord's diner. There were no social services, or very few, apart from later on the church. And what it meant was a few days' illness or an injury could have tragic consequences. And if you keep this in mind when you read about the Lord dealing with the paralyzed and the injured and the blind, how desperate their situation was. And so this prayer for daily bread reflects a kind of short-term lifestyle that was very common. Long-term planning is wise, it's biblical, but we don't have ultimate control over our future. It's not wrong to save money, it's not wrong to save food, it's wrong to rely on our planning. Jesus said, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist of the abundance of his possessions." And he told a story about a certain rich man who produced a good crop. His business took off. He said, "I'm going to build bigger barns. I'm going to store up all my grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry." He said, "I've got lively bread. No need to even think about God for daily bread." But then God said to him, "Tonight, fool, tonight your life is required of you." He was dead. And then Jesus said, so what's going to happen with all the stuff he stored up for himself? And this is what will happen to everyone who stores up things for himself but who is not rich towards God. And so this prayer for daily bread is a sort of protective barrier against the folly of trusting in what we do out of our own industry. It's the folly of not being rich towards God. It's a prayer of a larger perspective. And this simple prayer can help tether us to a heart of gratitude. Because, let's be honest, it really feels odd to say, "Oh, Father, give us today our daily bread," and then walk to the kitchen and put a bagel in a toaster. How do you do that? How do you pray for daily bread when you already have it in your house? Or you have money to go buy it? Maybe if you already have food, you should just skip this part of the Lord's Prayer, right? No, remember, this is more than content, this is intent. And this is about a heart of gratitude. For many people in the world, this is a real prayer. They're asking God to provide food that they don't have. And so if this prayer has been answered for you today, then maybe don't pray for something else, pray for someone else. And remember, the Lord's Prayer is an us prayer, not just a me prayer. It's, "God, give us our daily bread. Lead us not into temptation." So do your brothers and sisters around the world have food today? Are there not many who are hungry and crying out to God for food? And not just for food, but for peace and safety and relief from war. This is not just a prayer for self. This is a prayer for others as well. And as you pray for others' daily bread in the world, remember one of the main reasons why people lack daily bread. It's because of those who are in positions of leadership in various countries. Droughts and famines can cause people to lack daily bread, but lasting misery among larger groups of people are not tied so much to the disasters as it is to sinful and corrupt leadership. Because of their wickedness and their ineptitude, it prolongs the suffering. Because when the leadership is better, people rebound faster from disasters. And so it's not just pray for bread, but pray for leaders in places where people are suffering. That's what Paul said to do in 1 Timothy 2. And as you pray for people who are desperate for daily bread, don't waste your time feeling guilty for having access to bread. Be grateful. And then let the needs of others produce a sense of stewardship in you. Stewardship is always better. Stewardship as a driving force is always better than guilt as a driving force. Guilt is a driving force that just causes you to move back and forth. It's just sideways energy. It's like motors on both ends of your car working against each other. Stewardship is an actual engine that moves you forward. So if you've been given more than others, and along with the increased privilege comes increased responsibility, be grateful and then ask yourself and ask God, "What do you want from me today?" Jesus said, "From everyone who's given much, much will be required." And so give us today our daily bread is much more than a token prayer for something to eat today. It is a part of an antidote for a demanding heart. In a straight line, it's about 240 miles from Egypt to Canaan, and God took Israel on a much larger route, much longer route. And he was teaching them to go when he said go and stop when he said stop. And they arrived at the border of the promised land the first time in months, not years, and they sent in spies, 12 of them. Two came back and said, "Let's go. God is with us. Let's go." 10 came back and said, "No way we should go. We're all going to die." And the people listened to the 10, because sometimes majority votes are wrong. And the result was that all the adults who were of combat age would perish outside the promised land. And this set them on a 40-year wait. They didn't wander around the wilderness for 40 years, as commonly thought. If you read the scriptures, what happened was they spent a lot of time camped out right there in the hill country outside on the border of the promised land. And they were there for a long, long time until God finally said, stop, you're not going in. Start moving again. And finally, after years, when all the people who were adults at the time of the rebellion had died, they were allowed to go in. And they had turned what should have been a pretty short trip into 40 years. So what does this have to do with give us today our daily bread? Well, as we saw, God very literally provided bread on a daily basis for the entire 40 years. And he only phased out that provision just before they went into Canaan. You can read about that in Deuteronomy 2. And he told them, okay, now start buying food from the people who lived on the borderland between the wilderness and Canaan. And he began to phase out the provision of manna. But he'd been training his people to trust him. Move when I say move, stop when I say stop. Go in even when it looks dangerous. Eat what I provide, trust what I provide when you need what you need day by day. And yet their hearts struggled to trust and to not demand, much like ours do. So think about a demanding heart. Think about how toxic a demanding heart is. Think about how common it is. God, tell me what you're going to do and when you're going to do it. I need to know. God, why would you allow this to happen? How could you let this happen? There's no way a good God could allow that to happen. God, take this trouble from me or I can't trust you. God, this is not fair. This is not how things should be done. This is not how you should do things. How can I trust you when I'm so unhappy? I have to worry about the future because there's no way I can trust you with it. I'm going to do what I believe is going to make me happy. I have to do what's going to make me happy because I'm not confident you can give me all that I need. And there are many different ways of demand that we demand that God meet our needs. And demanding is the opposite of trust and gratitude. Asking is good, demanding is bad. Very small infants cannot be taught that life is not about them. We had some friends over last night and they have a brand new baby. And that baby was crying, and so everybody was moving and rocking and feeding and doing, and we didn't go, okay, now, you know what, life's not about you. You need to stop crying, we're trying to eat here. That baby doesn't care. That baby said, life, it is about me. And when I cry, you're going to move. You're going to take care of whatever I need, and we couldn't figure it out. When they demand, we meet those demands, but as they grow, we begin this difficult process, difficult for them and difficult for parents, of teaching them the lifelong lesson that it's not about you. And they still demand and demand, but wise parents know that if they don't adequately cure this child of their demanding heart, this child will grow up to be miserable. Because adults who don't learn it's not about them are miserable adults and make everybody around them miserable. And God is a wise parent. He just will not cater to our demands. Augustine said, our hearts are restless until they find their rest in thee. You could also say our hearts are demanding until they find their contentment in him. So give us today our daily bread seems on the surface like a sort of mundane prayer. And like I said, if you have bread in the cabinet, it could even seem like a sort of useless prayer. But it really is much more than that. It's a prayer of surrender. It's a prayer of dependence. It's a prayer of gratitude. When they asked the Lord, teach us to pray, he gave them a pretty short prayer. And he was very specific in the words he used. Embedded in this, give us today our daily bread, is a whole lot. It's a prayer of surrender. It's a prayer of dependence. It's a prayer of gratitude. Because most of the time, we want yearly bread. We want, give us our lifelong bread. We want, I don't want bread. I want something more than bread. We want guarantees that will allow us to escape the burden of having to trust God day to day. When we're starving, we long for daily bread. And we have daily bread. How long does it take before we want more than bread? If you're sick, if your throat is hurting, you in your mind you say, I will praise God every day of my life if my throat would just stop hurting. And then how long does that last? A day, 2 days? And we forget. We forget to be grateful. And so we have to continually stop, reorient ourselves. God, would you please give us this day what we need? And we have to leave the demanding behind, demanding from God and demanding from others. It's just such a deadly way to live. It just robs us of freedom and joy. And demanding this way leads to more demanding this way. We demand more and more from the people around us, and we're grateful and content less and less with the people around us. And demanding that goes this way eventually starts working this way. So we have to close the gap on dependence and on gratitude, keeping the simple reality in our minds and our hearts of God giving daily bread. It's important. Last week, our middle school and high school students were at camp, and we went up on Thursday, and they had a discussion about some questions that they had sent me. A lot of great questions. But I told them many of the questions, not all of them, but many of the questions were built on really three larger questions, or the answers came from three larger questions. And those three larger questions are the questions that everybody has, whether they can articulate them or not. And the first is what will I believe or who will I believe? Everybody lives by faith. That's a foundational question that many questions flow out of. The second is, who will I become? Everybody is becoming something, someone. And every single thing that happens to you and every choice you make is shaping you into someone. There is no neutral space. You are never in a neutral space. There's no neutral choice. Every word, every thought that comes over and you tell to keep going, every thought that you let set up camp in your head is shaping you. Every choice, every decision, everything that happens is shaping us all the time. Who will I become? And so then the third question is, well, then who do I want to become? What do I want my life to count for? I'm going to be dead someday. So it's not, I'm going to be dead someday, what then? It's, I'm going to be dead someday, so what now? What now? And you can't choose all that happens to you, but you can choose the shape your life takes. That's why justification, becoming right with God, is completely an act of grace. God gives you what you can't get yourself. Sanctification is this collaborative process with the Holy Spirit to choose to become more like Christ over time. And there are many things that you and I can't choose that happen to us, but we can always choose how we respond to those things, and there are many things that we can choose to decide, who am I going to become? What shape do I want to become? And the Lord has given us a shaping prayer here. This is no token throwaway prayer. Give us our daily bread. I've already got bread. This is a prayer to Jesus is telling us, and the intent here is make the choice to remember to be conscious of your dependency, and then make the choice to continue to be grateful. If you don't, you'll become more and more demanding and move far and far from freedom. So this is, oh God, I desperately need you. Help me to remember. Shape my mind, shape my heart to see this. Make me into a person who is trading, demanding for gratitude. Let's pray together. Talk to God, listen to God, and then we're going to worship Him some more together.